On this episode of The Playbook, I have six-time NFL Pro Bowl quarterback Donovan McNabb, most known as the controversial quarterback now, whether he will be the next African-American quarterback inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was a Heisman finalist. He was the NFL Man of the Year finalist twice. He is an unbelievable quarterback, a first-round draft pick, and I think, well, I'll let you know what I think later.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook. I have actually one of my other heroes, he doesn't know it, Donovan McNabb. Unbelievable quarterback, Pro Bowler, Syracuse superstar. The list will go on, but we're not here to talk about your football accolades.
I thought you were going to keep going.
Oh, I will. I can read them off.
I was about to say, all right.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I love about Donovan is, you know, Warren Moon is my business partner. Mm-hmm. And when we first met, you leaned over and you said, Warren's my hero. I'm like, me too. What was it that you looked up to in Warren Moon?
Well, you know, Warren's a fighter. And I think for all athletes or just normal human beings, when you find a person that you can kind of relate to, when things don't go your way, you're getting voices on the outside, people are saying what you can't do instead of kind of promoting the things that you can do. And from Warren's story and for where he ended up and the things that he was able to do, being African-American, a guy who can play the position, who was smarter than they gave him credit for, very successful everywhere he ended up, and he's a winner. And that was something that I seen myself in. And he was kind of the bar for me. And for a guy that I truly looked up to, he reached out a hand to me and just gave me advice when I needed it. Always would call and check on me. You know, we kind of threw some things off of each other. And for him to be rewarded to be in the Hall of Fame was well-deserved. And that gave light to every other player of the African-American descent to play the position that you have a chance. And for Warren and to see how successful he is off of the field now, it's something that we all continue to follow.
You know, it's great because I see Warren and my, one of our goals was that as your career went, you were known as a black quarterback.
Right.
Right. They actually, it was part of the title.
Yeah.
And we would say, gosh, you know, our goal someday is these quarterbacks absolutely will just be known as tall, strong, stupid, you know.
Exactly.
Drug addict, whatever the guy is. Mm-hmm. But why does color have to matter? And you were really, you know, you had Marlon Briscoe, then Warren Moon, mm-hmm. right? Doug.
Yes.
But you there were someone that so many kids also, you held a great responsibility because if kids can't see it.
Right.
Most of them can't believe it. What made Warren extraordinary and you extraordinary, there wasn't much to look at mm-hmm. to say, oh, I can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you had very few people to look up to. Now, everybody can do it.
Right.
It's like the 4-minute mile. Once it's broken, you know, everybody starts running a 4-minute mile. What type of pressure did that put on you? Because there's enough pressure to play in the league, mm-hmm. to be a quarterback in the league, to be a Pro Bowler in the league, to go to championships in the league.
True.
But, you know, everybody's looking at you through a microscope when you played. People today don't get what it was like, but if you did something, it was amplified.
Well, you know what's funny? You know, my path and my journey was a little bit different than Randall and Warren and Doug.
I forgot Randall, right.
And those guys, I would say, lit the torch for us. And they lit the torch and they passed the torch on. And I felt like I reached my hand out and I grabbed it because I felt like there were so many opportunities for us to showcase our talents if we were given that chance. And I thought the way that you kind of receive that chance and open the door for others is by proving people wrong. And the way that Warren went on to prove by playing in the Canadian League, playing in the NFL, and still playing at an elite level, I felt like he was still overlooked. And not only was he overlooked, but it was kind of a look past because of his skin color. And I felt if we continue this opportunity by playing on the high school level, being able to play on a collegiate level, you can't really look past us. And I felt like at that particular time, myself, Akili Smith, Dante Culpepper, Sean King, that year in 99, where you have so many African-American quarterbacks who have played at an elite level and have a chance now to be first-round draft picks really opened up the door for guys behind us. And that's when you see on the high school level people wearing number five or have an opportunity to get a Division I scholarship to an elite school, a BCS school. And then not only that, but play on a center stage, play on a national stage for a national championship. The Deshaun Watsons, the Jalen Hurts. I throw Tua in there. The list goes on. I mean, the list goes on where you look on a collegiate level, every Division I school has an African-American quarterback. Or if not, they're recruiting them heavily. So it opens up the door, and now you look back at the Pop Warner level. You know, you go out as far as the Pop Warner level, where you're seeing these kids who have the ability to play the quarterback position, and it's just a bonus that they can move, that they have mobility. And it's not about, hey, you know what, he's a black quarterback. You know what, he's a pretty good quarterback.
Right.
And Warner is going to be great.
Watch Cam Newton throw a football.
Well,
if he couldn't run, it'd probably be better for him.
But that's the thing. But that's the thing. It's we focus on the extra, the bonus.
Right.
You know, for Cam Newton, he won MVP. No one wants to talk about that.
Yeah.
He was the youngest quarterback to reach 30,000 passing or 10,000 passing yards and to play in a Super Bowl.
Right.
Where now you look at the list of quarterbacks that have played in the Super Bowl, you know, Doug has played in the Super Bowl. I've played in the Super Bowl. Cam Newton has played in the Super Bowl. You know, there's a pretty great opportunity for others to be able to achieve that goal.
Yeah, it was kind of fun to watch you play in the Super Bowl because I remember when you were drafted. I know Philly boos everything, but you were actually booed when you were drafted.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was a color thing. I think it was just people didn't
believe. They had an idea who they wanted.
Yeah, right.
They had an idea who they wanted. And again, I don't get upset of someone's opinion, you know, but just kind of have some information or evidence with it. You know, because there are comments that I make that people make it a little rattled. But there's evidence of what I say. And I love the fact that they felt that way because that was more motivation for me.
You know, and you're an extraordinary person off the field.
Right.
So you have the Donovan McNabb fun with diabetes. But also, you know, people look at athletes and just think, oh, well, they can be an announcer. They can be a broadcaster. I know that's not true. Akbar is one of my good friends, and he had 2 years on the sideline for free with the Chargers because, you know, as his agent, who's my friend, said, he just doesn't get it, Dave. He was horrible, and he worked at it.
Yeah.
But you are extraordinary. You know, guys, I even like, what's his name from Dallas that came on now, the ex-quarterback.
He's Tony Romo.
Yeah, Romo's great, right? You're like Romo with your insight. You can't replace that when you're on TV. Someone that is actually sat in the pocket, and you see things so much differently. But there's a bunch of naysayers out there always.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
How do you teach people, and I think you know, this is a great entrepreneurial question, to separate themselves not only from the bad opinion, but I also see athletes get caught into the good opinions, right? They start believing.
They start believing in everything they hear.
How do you separate yourself from all those opinions?
There's only one person that will be the toughest critic for you, and it's the guy that's looking across at you in the mirror. You have to understand who you are as a person. If you're stepping into a situation where you're unprepared, you have no clue of what to do. And for the broadcasting aspect, if you're not very good in front of the camera because you're shy, you know, it's going to be tough for you. And people will pat you on the back, people who you love. They always say, oh, you were great.
Right.
You know, I didn't really understand what you were saying, but you were great. You look good.
Right.
And when people say something like that, you know, you kind of like, oh, did I? Is that good or bad? But you have to be true to yourself. That's first and foremost. And then secondly, do you really love doing it? You know, it has to be a passion for you. When you step in front of the camera for a question that's presented to you, do you have a true answer? And can I look you in the eye and give that answer where people will know at the end of the conversation, wow, that was deep.
Right.
That was something that was genuine. Or is it something that's rehearsed? And that's something that I took pride in. And I've always wanted to become a broadcaster or analyst when I was younger. My goal around 8 or 9 was to be a sports broadcaster. And that's why I went to Syracuse University, because they were in the top 3 as far as sports broadcasting was concerned. And so, you know, people look at the football aspect of it. I planned for life after football at a young age.
Yeah.
And football was just an opportunity for me to get on center stage and showcase my talents from an athletic standpoint. But you always have to have a game plan when things happen or you decide to walk away. And broadcasting was my next step.
And was football the only, as a broadcaster, was football the only thing that you looked at, or would you
not broadcast? Not at all. I broadcast sport? Everything. Yeah. And basketball was my genuine sport, my number one sport.
You and Warren.
You know, it was. And I saw myself going to the NBA. And as a young kid, I think we all do.
Yeah.
But I also play baseball.
I thought I'd be the commissioner.
See?
I'm short, Jewish.
Nothing wrong
with
that.
Went to law school. David Stern to Dave Silver to Dave Meltzer.
Hey, you make more of the money.
Exactly.
You know? But I love all sports, and I love to talk all sports. You know, when I hear of the term barbershop talk, that's me every day.
That's great.
You know, and I have nieces and nephews who play hockey, so I've learned hockey.
Wow.
All my kids have learned soccer. They play soccer at a young age. Now, some things that, you know, I got to check out more about soccer, but you still learn. Basketball, football, you know, the list goes on of just sports that I love to talk about. And for everyone that listens, if we're on radio or if we're on TV, you can definitely tell the excitement of it when I talk about sports.
Right, and like Robin Roberts and Michael Strahan,
they've
proven, right, they're great broadcasters. It doesn't even matter if it's sports,
mm-hmm.
right? You're just good at conversation. You have great life insight. You have so many different facets in order to get to where you were.
Right.
You know, a lot of people think you have to do what you love.
No.
I disagree, right? Give me your opinion of that.
I think it's important for you to step out of the box and be able to explain something that people may not have seen you in. So for me to talk hockey, you know, people laugh about it at first and then they're like, wow, you're really insightful. And it's like, yeah, first of all, you got to study. Secondly, you have to be able to present it in a way that people will understand it at the end of the conversation. And at the end of the day, I mean, is it a productive conversation? You know, I can sit here and talk about, oh, you know, what Crosby with a great goal, you know, from the left wing. It's like, oh yeah, wow, he's seen that, you know, but they didn't know about the assist, the setup. They didn't know about the great defense down at the other end. They didn't know about the stop, the key stop to help them win 3-2. And that's things like that really start to shake up a lot of people. Or for basketball, for a sense. You know, people talk about the great art now of people shooting from the logo. Well, there are two key players who can do that at a 40% or better clip, and that's Dame Lillard or Steph Curry. You know, and it's not about the three. It's about, can you shoot the two consistently? You know, talk about Kevin Durant.
81 free throws. Or 81 three free throws.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, or if Steph Curry is shooting 60% from the field inside the 3-point lane. No one talks about that. You know, so I just think for everyone that may kind of be around me or I talk to it or interviews or whatever, that's something I like to go in depth with, because now I'm really giving you the insight instead of you just coming in with the mindset like I'm going to just kind of be plain Jane or Captain Obvious.
One of the other things that you do really well, you know, as I've watched you, is the emotional aspect of the announcing side, where, you know, no matter what sport you play,
right,
you see things on the bench, right? You see the coach, and you can talk about being 1 point down with so many seconds. Like,
right.
It's called situational knowledge that you have so much of. I love how you draw. You could be talking about hockey, and it could be really close, and you could give an analogy of a game at Syracuse,
right,
or a game, you know, with the Eagles or Minnesota, wherever you were, and it's really interesting, right, instead of just reporting what you see.
Well, you know, I think it's important that you kind of take it back to your experience. When you're watching something and you're in a tough situation, you know what? Back in high school, my coach would always tell me, continue to stay positive because the other people around you will kind of feed off of your energy. And that's when you reflect back to the actual game and say, you know what? This offensive tackle's fired up in the huddle. He's really picking up and exuding the energy in that huddle, where now this may be a big play on third and short. And all of a sudden they get a long run from the running back. And the first person that's out there getting excited is that tackle that you talked about. Or whatever it may be in different scenarios. I think it's important that you reflect back on it and then be able to get back to the task at hand. Too many times announcers want to reflect a little bit too much on their past, and they continue to reflect back on their past.
Right, right.
Where you're just like, okay, I don't think I was born at that time.
Short story long, right?
But, I mean, it's just the excitement of it all. It's just you have to be able to provide energy for your listeners, for your viewers, to get a better understanding of what it is that you're looking at. And then break it down in that way.
And you've practiced so much. I mean, you're so articulate. Thank you. People think that it's, you know, a born trait. Mm-hmm. It's a developed state. I mean, I had to work myself, even though all the schooling, everything I've done, it's, mm-hmm. You know, go back and listen to the first podcast that I did. I'm sitting there going, did I actually, you know, keep saying that exact same thing in the same way? For you, what was the most difficult thing in transitioning from playing into the booth?
I would say more of understanding your listeners. It's a little different than talking in a locker room, talking, sitting around in the cafeteria, being in a meeting room, then reaching out to the masses. You know, we can talk about anything when we're with our guys. You know, conversation to kind of go everywhere. And then everyone would kind of catch on. It's like one of those ones where you're like, what? Oh, okay. But when you're talking on camera, you have to be able to get right to your point. Get to your point, be able to explain your point, given that good background, that evidence, and then get out. You know, because on TV, you only have about 30 seconds. A segment may be 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 3 minutes. And you have to be able to get your point across from the very beginning when the question is asked, and then also give out your supporting statements. And so now you pass it to someone else.
Yeah, the two things I found most difficult was waiting. Like, you didn't realize how much went on around the actual camera side, mm-hmm. and then eating.
There's snacks everywhere. Yeah. You find yourself dipping your hand back into the M&M's.
Exactly, because you're bored. Exactly. Yeah. All right, last question. You do so much for charity.
Yes.
Right? We've talked about older players that have given back to you, other people that have given back to you.
Right.
The Donovan McNabb Fund addresses a huge issue in America. Yes. Diabetes is a huge issue.
Yes.
What motivates you most with the fund about giving back and leaving your legacy? What do you want that to look like?
Well, you know what? I started the foundation back in the early 2000s, and it was one that was very close to my heart. My father was diagnosed with diabetes. My brother has diabetes. My grandfather had diabetes. So it was one in which I was enriched in my family. And for me, it was one in which I felt it was important to be able to spread the awareness of the particular disease. In the African-American community, you know, we're ingrained in salt in everything that we do. It's about flavor. And sometimes that catches up to you. Not only just in the African-American community, but just across the world. A lot of people have been diagnosed with diabetes, but it may have been too late. You know, so I try to spread the awareness for everyone to go out and get tested and learn more about not only yourself, but your family history. And then be able to touch one person's life to maybe explain to them your process and what things that you went through in order to find out more information about it. So now they will do the same and it will continue on to be a domino effect. So I've supported diabetes camps out in Pennsylvania. I've been a part of the Diabetes Association for years. And it's one in which I think is very important, not just for diabetes, but for everything. Find out everything about your health. Because I have a lot of friends that have kind of went through the whole cancer deal.
Yeah.
I've had obviously diabetes being a part of my life and also in family and friends. And the list goes on of just learning more about your health, because I think it's very important, and me being on a platform where I can able to express that and reach out to the masses and just kind of make sure that they're aware of their future. And then also for them to understand, if they have been diagnosed with diabetes, your life's not over. You just have to rearrange a few things, monitor your eating.
Stop going to New Orleans.
You know, make sure you hit the gym and just kind of focus in on your body, because I think it's very important.
How old, you know, like I turned 50, so there's obviously some new awareness things you have to do when you turn 50 for detection. But for diabetes, how old should you be to go get tested at least for diabetes?
I personally think, you know, that it starts at a teenage age, because you never know. It could start young for some people. It may start late. But I think when you go out and get blood work and do all that other stuff for maybe a sports physical for some of these teenagers, or some that are in college, you know, to go out and just kind of find out a little bit more about your health and see where you are. Because I think it's important, if you catch it early, then you can monitor it the right way. But as you kind of get in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm just going to see my doctor. And then now you get some sudden news, it's kind of like, oh, you feel like your world has been rocked. But there's still opportunity for you to get right back on track. And so I think if we start at an early age and make that kind of an annual deal, maybe every 5 to 10 years, then I think, you know, you'll have a grasp on things.
My favorite thing about meeting and being friends with quarterbacks is they're presidential, right? You, to be a quarterback, you have to be a leader. Mm-hmm. And the higher the levels go, I love, you know, working with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, because it's so much fun for me to see, you know, the kid who's the high school all-state quarterback, right, thinking he's God. Mm-hmm. And then you go to college, and then you have the All-American in college, and you were a finalist for the Heisman Trophy. That's a whole nother level. Then you make the league. Then you're a starter. Then you're a Pro Bowler. Then you're a Hall of Famer. Then even within the Hall of Famer, you know, there's still, you know, Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, those guys. There's levels, but you're all presidential. So I'm going to ask an extra question, because I said it was the last, but I always like to ask the leaders of the leaders.
Right.
The Pro Bowlers of the Pro Bowlers, future Hall of Famer. You got my vote.
Thanks.
What best piece of advice would you give people? All the things you've learned and seen, what's like that number one thing that you see a little kid and you give them that one piece of advice?
It's never as bad as it seems, and it's never as good as you think.
Nice.
For kids and adults, teenagers as well, when you're having a down day or maybe even a down week, if you continue to stay positive and just kind of just take yourself off of that path that you were just on and refocus on another, you'll eventually get back on the path that you set for yourself if you just believe in yourself. If you believe in yourself, anything can be achieved.
There you go. The modern day Napoleon Hill, Donovan McNabb with Dave Meltzer here.
The Nostradamus.
There you go. Entrepreneurs, the playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.